Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. My name is Eric Schlitt of USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Joe Kenya is on vacation this week, so joining us is another one of my fellow Lions Wire writers, Scott Warhite.
Thanks a lot, Eric. Just don't ask me to cheer for Michigan State, and we'll be okay.
No, that's it's an all-Michigan podcast today, so hopefully we'll stay focused on the Lions and not, you know, go down to our maize and blue ways, I guess, right? So we're going to cover what we saw in last night's game against the Houston Texans. We're going to talk about the different signings and things that have happened throughout the week, just to kind of get everybody caught up so that in case you miss something, we'll have you covered. And I guess we should probably just like start right there. We should start talking about what the signings are, right? So the big signing from last week was Josh Johnson, the quarterback, right? Injury happens in the New England game in week one, and Tom Savage goes down. It is a confirmed concussion by the coaching staff, and we have, since he has a long history of concussions, the Lions need to make a move in order to have at least three functioning quarterbacks on the roster, and they sign Josh Johnson. So Josh Johnson comes most recently from the Washington Redskins, but he's played for 13 teams over his 12 years in the NFL, and so he brings that experience. Looked good so far in practice this week. He's took first-team reps over David Fales in last night's game, but it was an interesting dynamic that we'll get into a little bit more. After Josh Johnson, they also signed Deontez Alexander. Do you have any strong feelings on Deontez Alexander there, Scott?
You know, Alexander's a guy that's got a lot of raw talent. That's kind of one of the reasons why the Lions always are kind of bringing him back and finding a way to keep him on the roster, because the skills that he has, if he can develop them, are impressive, but he's still raw, and that's why he hasn't always stuck around. But the Lions keep bringing him back, and maybe one day he'll put all the pieces together, the light will go on, and but he's a guy they certainly like enough that he's kind of their first phone call. If they have an empty roster spot, he's the guy they seem to always call.
You know, he made a nice play in the Houston Texans joint practices. It lit up all over Twitter, where he made this nice little sideline grab in the end zone. Almost scored a touchdown in the game as well. Like you said, athletic is all get out, right? His biggest issue with me has always been his ability to get off the block. If they don't jam him, he's fun to watch. But if they jam him, that's always been one of his big problems. So let's see, what else? They added two more corners, Jamar Summers and Jonathan Alston. So Summers comes from the AAF, right? He had a nice, had a below average career, I guess, at UConn, but then and didn't really do a whole lot in the NFL, but went to the AAF, and I think he had three interceptions in their eight games, and he was apparently like one of the better defenders in the league. Got a shot in Miami with the Dolphins, and minicamp didn't make it beyond that. And the Lions signed him, but he's not the one that's really shown out. It's been Alston has been the guy who has shown out a little bit more. Do you have points that of anything that the beat writers wrote in Houston about him?
Well, one of the things that these two signings, the thing that jumps out to me is what does this say about Tease Tabor and sure. his injury, right? So he's been sidelined for the last couple weeks. We don't exactly know what it is. Looks like a kind of a lower body injury. And is he going to be able to come back from that? Is that something where they might stash him on IR for the first part of the year, and that way they can kind of put off making a final decision on what to do with him, whether he was going to make the final roster or not? They obviously wanted more bodies at the cornerback position. And so that's what jumped out to me was when they signed these guys, it was like, is how badly is Tabor hurt and how long is it going to take him to get back up to speed? He's still not practicing. So his path to the 53-man roster was already difficult. The injury has made it that much harder.
Yeah, and I think if you recall when the Coach Patricia talked about it, he had a very noticeable tone change when it came to Tease. He seemed very, I don't want to say pessimistic, but he seemed almost saddened by the fact that Tease was on his way to contributing And it seemed like the rug was kind of pulled out from under him, and it didn't sound like Patricia was overly optimistic about him getting back. One of the guys that was expected to step up in Tease's absence was Marcus Cooper, but he was on and off the injury report most of camp, and then he got released in order to make room for one of the younger guys. So not overly surprising, I guess, when you consider the injury history, but he was a guy who fit what they wanted and did some good snaps for them down the road last year, just didn't work out. Speaking of injuries, we saw since we've last talked, since we were since our we were week one recap, we talked about Kearse getting injured in that one. We talked about Kilgo getting injured in that one. Both of them, the injuries were significant enough that they had to go on the injured reserve. Trey Lamar was also cut and then reverted back to the Lions roster, and he is currently on injured reserve as well. Technically, the Lions have not announced that he's on injured reserve, but I've been it's been confirmed to me by a source that I have inside the organization that he indeed is on IR. So the good news with Lamar and the way that this works, for the people who don't follow the roster details as closely as some of us, when a younger player that's within the first 4 years of his contract, when he's not a veteran yet, they get they have to be released before they can be put on IR. They at this portion of the year, they have to be released before they can go on IR when they're not at that veteran status. So Lamar he gets waived with a injury designation. He does not get claimed by anyone else in the league, and now he reverts back to the Lions. Because he was injured with the Lions are now responsible for his contract. They can either come to an agreement where they pay him to basically go away, and the incentive for the players is that now they get that money and then they get the chance to go somewhere else to try and catch on another NFL team. But if the Lions are interested in keeping this player around, then they'll pay their whole salary for the year and they'll keep them on IR just like they would a veteran. And they did this last year with Garrett Dooley, and it worked out well. He's played well this year. He's got a shot at the practice squad again. And I think Lamar, they're going to take a similar approach with him, where he's going to be a guy that they think fits that off-the-ball profile that they want to go down the road. I know you've been at practices a few times. Did you see anything like that you liked about Lamar, or anything notable?
Lamar's a good run stuffer, powerful guy. Played, I thought, pretty well in the first preseason game. I thought he made a couple of nice stops in that game. And then, unfortunately, you learned afterwards that he had gotten the injury and had to be put in IR. But like you said with Garrett Dooley, Lamar's a perfect guy that if they can kind of stash him on injured reserve for the year, he probably wasn't going to get a lot of snaps at linebacker anyway. We can talk about this a little bit later. But linebacker's starting to look a little deep, which is we're starting to develop some real depth at linebacker. So he's kind of a guy that if you can get him into the system, have him learn for a year, he wasn't going to play anyway. This is a perfect way to keep him around and keep him in the system without potentially losing him to another team at some point.
Yeah, I don't think he was going to make the roster as it was. And so this is a typical Bob Quinn move that he learned from his time with the Patriots. You are not required to keep him on your 53. You get the red shirt him, and you get, like you said, that time to develop him. Continuing with injuries, Trey Flowers comes off the PUP, so the Lions get him back, and he hasn't really started doing a whole lot other than just some drills and practices, but he might get some more looks as the Lions head into week three this week in practice. Snacks Harrison also came off the NFI, so now he's eligible to play. That's another big boost to the Lions front. They still have injuries to Deshaun Hand, but Hand has been able to shed his protective arm brace for certain parts of practices. And then Daniels said that he would be ready for Houston, wasn't, and so maybe Daniels is getting close to returning as well. If they do, that's four starters on your defensive line.
That's right? Your front seven. I mean, you look at the front seven. Jared Davis is another guy that has missed some time and is kind of slowly getting back. And you start to look at it and you say, our entire starting defensive line, most of our front seven, has not practiced yet.
Yeah.
So on one hand, you say, wow, you know, the defense has, you know, it's kind of been up and down in the preseason, but a lot of those guys, we're missing our key players, our top free agent addition in Trey Flowers, Mike Daniels, who should be a powerful guy from the interior, Snacks Harrison, who's the best run-stuffing defensive tackle in football. All of these guys have been absent. You're slowly getting those guys back, and they're all trending in the right direction to be ready for that week one game against Arizona, and that's the game that matters. So if they're trending in the right direction, the Lions are being cautious with them in training camp and in the preseason games, that's just fine. Get them ready to go week one against Arizona.
Yeah, so the Lions are getting healthier, right? And it's with a couple weeks left, you're now getting guys back. Now, yes, of course, there's a guy like Tease who, like you said, could end up on IR. That wouldn't be terribly surprising. Even Austin Bryant is another guy who I think falls into those categories, could end up on IR, where they could basically like redshirt him, just because we don't know the extent of his injury either. But while the Lions are getting healthy, we are seeing other teams lose big injuries on to their significant starters. For example, the Lions' Week One opponent, the Cardinals, they just lost their cornerback.
Robert Alford.
Thank you, Robert Alford. And remember, Patrick Peterson is suspended the first four games. So all of a sudden, the Cardinals now are down their top two corners for at least game one. And then when you look at the Lions' Week Two opponent, the Chargers, their safety, Derwin James, went down. He's expected to miss months. And so now you've got their most dynamic defender out. You've got the Cardinals' most dynamic defender out. And then it doesn't seem as like out of the box for Patricia to want to rest his guys. When you look at the opponents right in front of them are getting some pretty significant injuries. I understand the concept of wanting to protect your stars.
And the Chargers, too, you also have to look at. Melvin Gordon, their star running back, he's holding out, and he looks like that could be another Le'Veon Bell situation where he holds out into the regular season. Keenan Allen, their star wide receiver, has missed time in training camp and is not practicing right now due to an injury. So some of the Lions' opponents the first couple weeks of the year might be a bit beat up, and the Lions seem to be, hopefully, trending in the right direction with some of their star players.
Yeah, I mean, those are all meaningful games, right? So let's actually shift gears here and go to a meaningless game and review week two of the preseason, right? So we could talk about the game, but what I think would be a better exercise for us is just to kind of go through the roster and talk about what did we see at each position, what did we think about what happened, and then we'll just kind of see where the conversation takes us from there. So at quarterbacks, Stafford didn't play a snap. Again, unexpected, or that it was expected that he wouldn't play any. I don't think he really needs to. One of the things that Patricia talked about was that joint practices have the same amount of intensity as preseason games. And if he can get Stafford reps in those joint practices, they're just as valuable as him being in the game. So no need to risk him in those high contact areas. Then Tom Savage didn't play because of the injury, so that left Josh Jackson and David Fales. Josh Jackson gets the start, but he doesn't look as impressive as Fales.
One of the things with Josh Johnson, the quarterback, is he just got here this week. So
Correct. Yes. They
threw him into the fire, and yes, he did not look very impressive in the first half against Houston, but to be here in that game at all, learning a brand new playbook. I know he had some familiarity with Sean Ryan, our quarterback coach, but to pick up a new offense, new offensive players around you, having to pick that up on such an expedited basis for Johnson, it was probably to be expected that he was going to look as shaky as he did. But one of the things that the Johnson signing did and giving Johnson first team snaps, it lit a fire under David Fales. Fales looked horrible against New England. I mean, there's no kind of two ways about it.
Understatement.
And he looked like a real quarterback. And now, again, that's against third stringers. It was in the second half against Houston, against guys who probably are not going to make the Houston final roster. But that kind of lit a fire under David Fales. And we saw him make throws that we have not seen from him before. So if the Josh Johnson signing did anything, it may have allowed us to see the best of David Fales.
Yeah, you know, I do think it speaks to Johnson's practice play. that he was the guy who started, even though, like you said, he's only been on the roster a week. When he signed with Washington last year, he went from a street free agent to starter in 2 weeks. And I mean, that's an impressive feat to be able to learn it that quickly. The fact that the Lions put him first on the field speaks to how quickly he is picking things up. So, yeah, I don't think we need to read too much into his errors in the first half. Like you said, those are to be expected. But it, like you said, I agree with you in the fact that now Fails has been awoken, right? And at one point, we were going halfway through the fourth quarter. He had a perfect passer rating, and then they started dropping catches. And it was like, it was ridiculous, right? So it's you feel a little bit more comfortable now. In my mind, Savage is still the clear number two. He's looked sharp all preseason, but he has a huge question mark around that concussion because he has that history. So
that was one of the things I thought in the first preseason game that sort of got overlooked was I thought Savage looked really good. And when I rewatched the first preseason game against New England, what jumped out to me was just how sharp Savage looked. So that injury really did sort of set the Lions back, and hopefully he can recover quickly. But that is something that I don't think got enough play after the New England game because it was so. There's a lot of negativity coming out of that game, but I don't think Savage was responsible for that. I thought he actually looked pretty good in that game.
And let's set the expectations bar where it needs to be as well. Like if Stafford goes down, it doesn't matter if it's Savage, Jackson, Fails. The team's going to struggle. And what they're looking for in this backup quarterback is someone who can manage the team until Stafford can come back. If he's down for the year, the team is just in massive problems. But that's true of most NFL teams.
And that's why you keep Stafford on the bench in the second preseason game and you don't play him. And that I was 100% in agreement with Patricia on that. I wouldn't have played Matthew Stafford last night. And I am perfectly fine with them taking an extraordinarily cautious road with him because, like you said, especially with the uncertainty with Tom Savage, there's nothing behind him. So you can't afford any kind of injury to Stafford. These games don't count. Let's make sure he's ready for Arizona. Let's not take any chances.
And there's also this school of thought that he needs these reps. He doesn't. Like, he's been in the league for 11 years. He's getting these same scheduled reps in joint practices. He doesn't need the preseason games one or two. He just doesn't.
No, and we've got a new offense. I understand we have a new offense with a new offensive coordinator and a new center with Frank Ragnow moving over to center, but the Lions weren't going to run their real offense anyway. So any snaps that Stafford got were not going to be running this new offense because the Lions run an extraordinarily bland offense in the preseason, so they're not going to show anything. None of the skill players, none of the wide receivers played yesterday. Kenny Galladay, Danny Amendola, and Marvin Jones all didn't play. So I don't think the value in putting Stafford out there for 10 snaps, 12 snaps, whatever it might have been, was worth the risk of having him get injured.
Right. So the receivers, they were missing the top three. But if we look at the what that creates, is that creates an opportunity for the other receivers to step up and hopefully see if one of them can establish a wide receiver three or a wide receiver four role. With Kearse going down last week, that created a big hole that they're looking to fill as a depth type of wide receiver. And I think when we're looking at these wide receiver four and fives, there's two things that we need to keep in mind. One, are they good enough where they can contribute on offense if there's an injury? And then two, they have to be able to contribute on special teams. And so based on snap counts, based on what we've seen in practice, based on all the factors that we've seen leading up to this point, in my mind, there's four players that are competing for those two spots. And those four players are Chris Lacy, Travis Fulgham, Andy Jones, and Brandon Powell. I know Tom Kennedy got a start. He's and Tommy Lee Lewis got a start, but they saw 10 snaps and Kennedy saw 21, right? But Powell only saw 10. I don't think they're as in the mix as those other four. And Lacy, Jones, Fulgham, and Powell, they all have key contributions on special teams. They all have been guys that have been featured prominently. The four of them led the receivers groups in snaps last game. In my mind, it's up to them. So when you look at these guys, Lacy has been the one that's been playing consistently well on offense. Andy Jones has been the guy who's been playing consistently well on special teams. Fulgham is your drafted rookie with the high ceiling, as we saw in that with that catch yesterday, right? And then Powell is this kind of multi-purpose gadget player. So it's hard to tell exactly which way they want to go, but for me, I know which two I have in my mind. You want to weigh in on the receivers?
I think Travis Fulgham being the draft pick, again, like you mentioned, he had that incredible catch down the sideline yesterday. He's going to get sort of every opportunity to make the team. And both him and Lacy, both Fulgham and Lacy, got significant special team snaps in the game last night against Houston. And they both played well on special teams. And that's kind of their ticket to the roster. Andy Jones has kind of carved out that niche as run blocking, special teams, but can he bring enough as a receiver to make the team? Because I think of the four, he's probably the least likely to make an impact on offense, but he may be able to bring the most on special teams. So you sort of have to wait, and you can say if Lacy and Fulgham can play as well or even close to as well on special teams as Andy Jones does, they both bring more on the offensive side of the ball, and they may be able to push themselves ahead.
When I'm creating my 53-man roster, this is how I look at wide receiver four. It's a guy who can play primary offense but also contribute on special teams. When I look at wide receiver five, I look at that as a primary special teams guy who can also contribute on offense if needed. So for me, wide receiver four, who's your best offensive player? Well, that's either Lacy or Fulgham, right? One of those guys are going to win that. And if you flip it over and you say which one is the best special teams guy, well, typically it's been Andy Jones. But like as you just pointed out, Lacy and Fulgham have been grading high from PFF on their special teams. So if those two can show that they can be both good offensive players and good special teamers, whereas Andy Jones is only a special teamer, and he's at the equivalent level of both Fulgham and Lacy, I don't know how Andy Jones is going to make this team. He has to be significantly better than them to pick up that wide receiver five spot. And then we'll see what happens with four. Now, this brings me to an article that I wrote the other day when Josh Gordon was re-signed with the Patriots. And we all know Bob Quinn's history of plucking guys off of players that he saw in joint practices. They have two guys on their roster that are now on the bubble and could potentially get cut or maybe potentially traded. And those guys are Philip Dorsett and Braxton Berrios. Now, there's a couple other guys that, of course, fall into that category. But Dorsett and Berrios are both fast guys. Dorsett's a legit 4.33 40. Berrios was a 4.44. But Berrios is more of like a slot Danny Amendola type clone, whereas Dorsett is a legit speed option that this offense is missing. And if you look at Bevel's offenses in the past, they've always had a 4.3 speed guy, which they don't have. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the Lions trade for Philip Dorsett if he's legitimately on the bubble in New England, add him as wide receiver four, and then that winner between Lacy and Fulgham ends up being your wide receiver five. And we'll see where it goes from there. I mean, maybe Berrios fills that same role. I mean, I definitely would like to see him on the team, but I think Dorsett is more of what they're missing on offense.
Dorsett makes a lot of sense, just like because what you said is that speed element, and we've got a lot of guys who have a lot of talent, but we don't necessarily have the guy that can take the top off the defense.
Yep.
And he's got the ability to do it. He's got the ability to do that with that 4.3 speed. The other player that is just really interesting is Brandon Powell, because. Yeah. He is both the player that I have the hardest time finding a role for or a spot for, but also the hardest guy I have cutting because he is so valuable. He can do kickoff returns, obviously punt returns, but he is also somebody that they can line up at running back. They can line up in the slot. They can move him around, use him as a gadget player. There's a lot of different things that they can do with him, and he does seem to show up in games. So. It's just I don't know where the roster spot comes from for Brandon Powell, but he also makes it very, very difficult to leave him off the roster. So that's going to be a very difficult decision that they're going to have at the end of the preseason.
Well, I mean, they kept him as wide receiver six all of last year, just for those reasons that you pointed out. And if they're going to keep six, I think they would keep six because of Powell, not because of a guy like Andy Jones. I think Powell would be the guy that might force them to keep six. But again, like you said, I'm looking at my roster and I'm like, where does it come
from? It's hard to find a spot.
The scary thing is, it could come at the expense of a guy like Zach Zenner, right? So if we look at the running backs, I mean, there's a clear three-headed monster that they have in Kerryon Johnson, C.J. Anderson, and then Nick Bowden, who's going to be a legit fullback that they're going to play a lot. Each of those three guys saw eight snaps, and then the coaches said, that's it, we're done, we don't want to see you anymore. And then they turned to the rookie, Ty Johnson. Ty Johnson gets the bulk of the carries last night. He looked sharp. You can see the difference between him and Zach Zenner. You can see the difference between him and Theo Riddick and why they were willing to move on from Theo Riddick. And then Zenner ends up coming on it as your fourth running back, followed by Mark Thompson and Justin Stockton. But I still think Zenner's in for me over Powell right now, but I'm also it's very clear to me he's behind Ty Johnson.
One of the things that was interesting last season was the Lions didn't really dress more than three running backs in a game. When they were putting their 46-man roster together on who was going to be active on game days, for the first half of the year, Zach Zenner was inactive. He was on the team, but...
No, he was injured, though.
He was injured. But there were games where, after he came back, where he was inactive because they did not want... they didn't want to dress more than three running backs and a fullback, so four total.
Yeah, it took Kerryon's injury before he got
back into the lineup. So the question then becomes, if he's not going to be active on game day, do you keep somebody like a Brandon Powell over him that they may be able to use more than Zenner? That's going to be a very interesting roster construction decision that they're going to have to make.
Yeah, I still, before you start sending hate tweets at me, I still think Zenner is in this roster. I still think he's in over Brandon Powell. But this is a legitimate scenario that they're going to have to deal with. So tight end, I still think they're keeping four. They still are acting like they're keeping four. They, we saw good things from Hockenson. Excuse me. We saw good blocking from Jesse James. Logan Thomas has been quiet this preseason, but I don't think they really want to show out everything he has. The opportunities have been there for Isaac. Cunningham had a bad drop. Nauta had a bad drop. Trailer had a bad drop. And so, I still think it's Nauta's to win that fourth spot, but, he definitely, these guys all show that they are definitely on the bubble and probably with Cunningham and Trailer, probably on the outside.
And that's another spot, too, the Isaac Nauta fourth tight end spot. If they don't keep four tight ends, well, that's how you can keep you can keep six wide receivers. That's how you can keep an extra running back. So, again, when you're making that roster decision, it's not always fighting among the individual positions. It's fighting between positions. And do we keep an extra tight end or an extra wide receiver or an extra running back? So those battles are really going to go down to the wire.
Yeah, I think Powell, Zenner, and Nauta are fighting for two spots, and somebody's on the outside. The offensive line had some really interesting constructions yesterday. We started out with the standard offensive line that they've had all week, which was Decker at left tackle, Joe Dahl at left guard, who is taking over for Kenny Wiggins. Kenny Wiggins was bumped to the second team. We'll talk about that in a second. So Joe Dahl was at left guard, Ragnow was at center, Graham Glasgow at right guard, and the very underrated Rick Wagner at right tackle. The two tackles in the center with Ragnow, they all play the exact same amount of snaps, and then they're done. Like, they get what they get, and then that's it. Okay, 14 snaps, three series, and then go sit down, because we know what we have in you three. I still say they know what they have in Graham Glasgow, but they're using him along with another guard or another starting caliber guard, because they want to see how the guards work in tandem. In this scheme, in the zone schemes, you need those interior offensive linemen to be able to work cohesively. So they keep putting these two, Graham and whoever the starter is for that week, out there at the same time. When they shifted to the second team, Dahl and Glasgow stayed out there for two more series, but then we saw Donnell shift in at left tackle, Boanko at center, and then Wiggins taking over at right tackle for the injured Tyrell Crosby. Now, some of you may say, why is Wiggins going from starting left guard to backup right tackle? And the answer is pretty clear. Look at how bad the tackles were in game one. Donnell and Crosby both got embarrassed. And so the Lions said, we need to find somebody who is also capable of backing up our tackles if they need to start. And Wiggins is their best option. And that's why they're using Wiggins at that tackle spot now. Could he still be in the mix at left guard? Absolutely. But they need to get Joe Dahl experience at right guard or left guard in case he needs to step up. They need to get Wiggins experience at right tackle in case one of the tackles has a problem, because we don't know what's going to happen with Tyrell Crosby. You want to? What did you say about that offensive line? Anybody else stick out to you beyond those guys?
I think your point about making getting Glasgow and Dahl snaps together, because throughout training camp, those guys have not played together a lot. There's been a lot of rotation among the offensive line, but we've never really seen Dahl, until this week, we've never really seen Dahl and Glasgow play guard together.
Yep.
They've always kind of been split up. You've always had Wiggins and Glasgow, and you've had Dahl and Odiebushi. Well, now we're putting Dahl and Glasgow out there at the same time, so you want to get those guys some extra snaps together so they can get their line calls synced up. They can be used to each other on the line at the same time. So to me, that made a lot of sense to get them some extra snaps together.
So Bolanco was getting second team reps, but I thought he struggled. I still think he's on the fringe, but I don't think he's leaning in to the roster now. I think he's leaning a little bit more on the out. And Odiebushi, it seems to me that his stock is kind of falling a little bit in my mind. They move with Dahl moving up to the first team, opened up a spot for Bo Benchowl to come in at left guard. Benchowl, I thought, has been improving. Odiebushi looked like he was maybe going in the other direction. But Odiebushi, Bolanco, and now Benchowl look like they're kind of in the mix for that final offensive line spot. And because I still think Crosby's going to make it. I still think Donnell's going to make it. But if you're going to keep nine offensive linemen, you've got your starting five plus your reserve tackles and then your reserve interior guy. And now it's, who do you like best? Do you like Odiebushi's veteran experience, Bowanko's veteran experience, or Ben Chowell's upside? And if you look back at how the Patriots have developed offensive linemen, that nine spot typically goes to a younger player, especially when, as you pointed out earlier, they're not going to dress. They're only going to dress seven of these guys on a week-to-week basis. So if you don't want to lose him, just like they didn't want to lose Powell last year, you can keep Benchow on your 53, and then you just don't dress him. And you allow him to get paid and be on the roster, and you can develop him. Because as we talk about, it seems like every week, developing offensive linemen is a really hard thing to do. So what's more valuable, Benchow or the veteran experience in Odiebushi? It's a tough decision.
And one of the problems that I think Bowenko has in making the roster is, he's a center. So you would say traditionally, oh, well, maybe you need a backup center. Well, we've got backup centers already on the team. So if something were to happen to Frank Ragnow, Graham Glasgow can shift back over to center. He's got a lot of experience there. They have cross-trained Joe Dahl at center over the last couple years. So he at least has done it in practice and has some experience in it. So to keep a backup offensive lineman to play center is not necessarily as necessary the way the Lions have constructed their roster as it would be on some other teams. So that's why I think that you've got Odiebushi and Benchowl that kind of have a leg up right now on that last spot. Mm. And then, like you said, it comes down to, do you want somebody with more veteran experience, or do you want to keep Benchowl? And because, there are a lot of teams that were interested in him when he went undrafted. Somebody might grab him and stash them on their 53-man roster if you subject him to waivers at the end of the preseason. So you're running the risk of losing him if you don't put him on the final roster.
Again, We're talking really highly about him, but again, we're talking about him as a developmental standpoint too, right? We want to make sure that we're not saying a Benchowl's in the.
We're not ready to put him in the starting lineup. No.
He might be player 52 on the 53-man roster, or you know what I mean. Like, so yes, he's still got a long way to go, but you can see there's things about him that you can like. All right, so let's shift defense. You know, as we mentioned right off the top, they didn't get any of their starting defensive line in. When you don't have a guy like Snacks Harrison eating up double teams, when you're missing your two best pass rushers in Flowers, or three best pass rushers in Flowers, Daniels, and Hand, it's not surprising that they weren't able to generate a whole lot of pass rush. Yes, they brought Akwara back, and yes, they had Devin Kennard in there. But Akwara and Devin Kennard really didn't create a whole lot of pressure last year when they were on the roster, so I don't think we should be surprised that they weren't generating a whole lot of pressure this year. They have value. They're good run stuffers, but really they aren't the guys. They're going to be more situational pressure guys rather than guys that you're going to put out there every day and every snap and expect to be every down pressures. Flowers, Daniels, Hand, you expect that from those guys. As they come back, I think those pressures will go up and that'll impact the defensive line as we go. So with those guys out, we saw Fred Jones get started at nose tackle, and next to him at the three technique was A'shaun Robinson. But Jones gave snaps, him and PJ Johnson, the seventh round pick, they split snaps, both rookies. Atkins was hurt, so those were the only two nose tackles they had on the roster. Jones started, Johnson backing them up. At the three technique, with Daniels, Hand, and Ray Smith, the three techniques that were hurt, that left Robinson and Strong. And so Strong leads the way in snaps for the defensive line once again because they're not going to overplay A'shaun Robinson. So Strong gets a lot of snaps. He's such a unique guy. And based on, from my opinion, based on what I've seen out of the reserve nose tackles in Atkins, PJ Johnson, and Fred Jones, I haven't seen enough to say a hole plugger in the middle, a backup hole plugger in the middle, is better than a Kevin Strong, who can do Deshaun Hand-like things and play everywhere from the zero to the seven. And so if they're going to keep a seventh defensive lineman, I don't know if it's going to go to one of those backup nose tackles. I think Kevin Strong is a very quietly a sleeper play for this roster.
I think he's certainly played well in practice, and I think you can also kind of use your practice squad to your advantage. A guy like PJ Johnson, some of these other guys, they might be able to. You can get those guys onto your practice squad without other teams kind of snatching those guys away. So you can use that practice squad to your advantage. Those guys aren't going to be active on game day anyway. Put them on the practice squad and use a guy like you said, like Kevin Strong, who can play all over the defensive line. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we've heard over and over again from Matt Patricia, from Bob Quinn, flexibility and versatility, that is the key to making the roster. So if you can do more than one thing, play backup at more than one position, that's going to be your ticket to the 53-man roster.
And that leads me to talk about Mitchell Levin, right? Mitchell Levin is a guy who plays defensive end, and right now it would be Flowers, Akwara, and Levin would be the number three guy. But he can also play at the three technique, just like Trey Flowers can. So Levin is a guy with that positional flexibility, and he could be a guy that sneaks into the roster over a Kevin Strong or over one of those backup nose tackles. And it might surprise people, but again, that positional flexibility, it pays dividends in this defense. So just like on that offensive line, if they're going to keep that seventh defensive lineman, it's down to just a couple of guys who are competing for that.
One of the other things that I liked from last night's game, especially in the first half, on the fourth quarter, it kind of fell apart a little bit, but in the first half, the run defense, right? So you're without Snacks Harrison, you're without some of your top run-stuffing defensive tackles and defensive linemen, but they still shut down that Houston Texans running game. I think the Texans had averaged 2.6 yards a carry in the first half. So the Lions have built their defense around stopping the run, and they've made a bet that if they can stop the run and make teams one-dimensional, they'll be able to win. And it was encouraging to see that message play through, not just from the starters, who a lot of the starters didn't play, but into your backups, that they knew how important it was to stop the run, and they were able to do it successfully.
So then people might counter that and say, but Scott, the secondary didn't look as sharp. Well, here's the thing. If you're stopping the run first, and that's your philosophy, and that philosophy transcends throughout the roster, the reason the secondary didn't look as good was because the pressures weren't there, right? But when you add these starters back in, now the pressures come, now there's less time for the secondary to cover, and now the secondary starts to look better. So there's a combination of things that have to happen. Yes, I agree with you. I like that the message is transcending. We're just not seeing the talent level of a starting NFL defense right now up front. And that's coming. That's going to be here sooner than I think people
think. There's a reason why Trey Flowers got as much money as he did. And that's because he is a transformative player on the defense. And once he gets in there, that makes the entire defense better, not just the defensive line. It makes the secondary better. It makes the linebackers better. He's a guy that can really transform the whole defense, and we haven't been able to see that yet, but hopefully in the next couple weeks, we will.
Let's be honest, we could say the exact same things about Mike Daniels.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
Right. Okay, so at Jack linebacker, we saw Devin Kennard take 20% of this, or 20 snaps, like 30% of the snaps or whatever it was, 20 snaps on the field. Eric Lee, his backup, saw the exact same amount. And then from there, with Austin Bryant hurt, we saw a combination of Malik Kearney and Anthony Pittman take some snaps there. But both Anthony Pittman and Kearney also got backup off-the-ball linebacker responsibilities. So when we look at the linebacker group as a whole, with Jared Davis out, what we saw is Jelani Tavai step up at the mic, had the green dot, was making the calls, and then next to him starting was Christian Jones. That makes sense based on the fact that Jared Davis isn't there. But when Davis comes back, he's slotting in at the mic, and Tavai goes back to the will, and then Jones goes to the bench, right? But this speaks to the depth of this linebacker crew, because you've got Christian Jones, who is capable of starting, will probably be coming off the bench. Jalen Reeves-Maybin, who had a phenomenal game.
He ate his Wheaties yesterday.
Is going to be coming off the bench as well. And now, all of a sudden, you have four off-the-ball linebackers that are capable of playing multiple spots. I don't know if you could qualify Reeves-Maybin as a starter necessarily just yet, but you have three capable starters for two spots. That's part of what makes this whole defensive multiplicity effective, right? Add in a guy like Miles Killebrew, who is primarily a special teams guy, but is showing some chops in C-ball, hit-ball type of linebacker play. Now I think he's got an inside shot at the roster. Pittman is a guy who is probably going to hit the practice squad because he has some very good positional range as well. So we haven't even seen Steve Longa yet. Dooley has some positional range. This linebacker crew is much better than I think it gets credit for right now, and it's starting to show that there's a lot of flexibility. And Tavai, I am very encouraged on what I can see out of him.
One of the things I wrote about in my takeaway piece on Lions Wire coming out of the game last night was how much confidence the coaching staff obviously has in Tavai to put him in the position of calling out the defensive plays, to helping guys get lined up in the right position. That is a lot of responsibility to put on a guy who was really playing his first snaps. He played four snaps in the game against New England. This was his first opportunity to get significant snaps in a game, and they're not just putting him out there and having him play. They're having him communicate the signals, get everybody lined up. That is a lot of responsibility to put on a rookie, and I think shows how much faith the coaching staff has in Tavai and how important he's going to be to that defense this season.
To expand on that even further, not only is that a huge responsibility, but he's also being asked to learn Mike, Will, Jack, and when they put a fourth linebacker, the Sam spot as well. This guy is learning four positions, calling out and adjusting other players, and nothing looks too big for this kid. When you talk to him in practice, when you watch what he does, the situation is never too big for him. He looks confident. He looks controlled. He makes the right adjustments. And again, we're just starting to scratch the surface on the potential of what he can do. Excuse me, I have a little scratch there. All right, so let's shift out of the linebackers because we like what we're seeing from them. Corner gets a little bit trickier. I mean, I think with Tease injured, we talked about that Rashawn Melvin is easily taking over that starting role. So we really know like who the starting corners are. It's Slay and Melvin on the outside. Coleman's your starting nickel. Then it gets a little bit wishy-washy after that. It sure looks like right now Jamal Agnew is the top reserve on the inside, but he's also taking snaps on the outside as well. When he lines up on the outside with the second team, it's Amani Oruwariye, who's also taking those second team reps. And then when we get into the third, we're looking at guys like Mike Ford, Diversion, Jonathan Alston, Shashiri, Summers. These are the guys that are competing for those other spots. But when we look at who the guys who are they have the real shot at the 53, it's Melvin Slay, Coleman, Agnew. We talked about Tease being a wild card. And then if Oruwariye is five, can a guy like Virgin or Mike Ford make it because of their special teams ability? That's a big question mark where I think they could sneak in if Tease, like you said at the beginning, ends up on like IR.
And D Virgin is impressed with his special teams snaps. I mean, I've been impressed with what I've seen from him both in practice and in games on special teams. And like you said, that's kind of that last cornerback spot is likely going to go to somebody who can really contribute on special teams. So you're going to have to find, especially when, and we'll talk about this in a minute, the safety group is really deep. So if you're trying to find room for an extra corner, maybe they beat out a safety like Andrew Adams or Charles Washington, but Washington's an incredible special teams player. So how do you find room for all these guys? It's contributions on special teams. That's how these guys at the bottom of the roster are going to make it.
So D. Virgin led the team in special team snaps last week. He and Charles Washington each had 17. The fact that Virgin can play and contribute at corner and be a dynamic special teams player is problematic for Charles Washington. Now, I've said this before. Charles Washington is probably the best special teams player on this team, but if he only plays special teams, how's he going to make it on this team? It just seems like they have so many other guys that can do multiple things. Even if he's phenomenal, his path there is really going to be really hard. With D. Virgin stepping up, there's a real chance that Virgin is the guy who knocks Washington off the roster as opposed to like a Mike Ford. When we look at the safety group, you've got Tracy Walker and Diggs, who are your obvious starters. When they want to go three, it's been Tavon Wilson, but he had a minor injury this week, and so they turned to Will Harris as their number three. Will Harris absolutely played phenomenal. He had the scoop score. He had a nice pass breakup. Harris has really found his niche in that third safety spot. Like this week, he found it, right? They've been taking it slow with him. Jeff Risden, in his takeaways from the game, said Will Harris is the Lions' version of Jabril Peppers. When they put him in at the linebacker level and ask him to do safety things like cover tight ends and hit people, that's where he finds the most success. That's what Peppers is doing right now, and that's why he's succeeding. Will Harris can be that guy, and if he finds success, that's going to put pressure on Tavon Wilson. And even if Wilson makes the roster, there's your top four safeties. Then that leaves Andrew Adams competing for that fifth spot. And now what happens to Charles Washington, right? Andrew Adams had another pick yesterday, but he also had some bad things.
Got burned for a touchdown. And so one of the things with Adams is he has a nose for the football. He had 4 interceptions last year for Tampa Bay in limited playing time, including picking off Cam Newton 3 times in one game. He's made plays in practices. He's made plays in games. He always seems to be around the ball, but there also seems to be negative plays with him. So the question is, can his nose for the football and his ability to create turnovers overcome maybe some soft coverages or some blown coverages on other plays? And is he the risk-reward in playing him? Are the Lions willing to gamble that he's going to get enough turnovers where that will overcome the negative plays?
The thing is okay, he still has a lot of champions in Lions camp right now. I think there's a lot of people that still think that he is worth he's worth a spot, right? When turnovers are your priority and you're going into this offseason and you're saying, hey, we need guys that can turn the ball over, and then you go and you get him and then he starts making interceptions almost on a daily basis. Yeah, he's exactly what you're saying you wanted, and now most people are going to believe that, yeah, he's probably locked in at that safety 5 spot, or maybe even, you know, if you think he's ahead of Will Harris, then safety 4, right? But it's going to be so hard to cut your teeth in on this special on this safety group, especially if you're running third like Charles Washington. And so, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting. It's another situation where you've got talented players that can do multiple things ahead of them, and I could see Adams as a bubble guy myself. I still have him in, but I understand the trepidation of saying maybe he's not as good as keeping just for interceptions. Because if you keep him on the roster, but he's never going to see the field, well, then he's not going to turn the ball over for you, right? So maybe that spot's more valuable going to another player like a Charles Washington who can contribute on special teams. Because Adams is not the special teams player that Charles Washington is. And when you're talking about those last five roster spots, having a guy like Adams is nice, but if you're not going to play him, well, maybe Diversion steps up. Maybe Charles Washington steps up. We'll kind of see what happens from there. All right, special teams, I think we know what it is, right? Mulbach, Prater, Martin. I don't think you've seen – I've seen anything from Santoso that makes him worthy. Have you seen anything?
No.
Okay, yeah, right. So that is what it is. I can see we are over – oh, geez, we're almost at 51 minutes. So that's about time for us to shut it down. We got through everything. I think the only thing we didn't talk about that I wanted to was that Matt Nelson, the offensive tackle, got snaps over Ryan Pope. And so for those who are looking at the money that Ryan Pope got and thinking that that's going to give him a path to the roster, he's getting out-snapped right now by a guy who was playing defensive tackle just 6 months ago.
And let me tell you, I thought Matt Nelson, for a guy that is just learning the offensive tackle position, he looks like somebody worth developing. And right. and he is a perfect guy to make that practice squad. And sometimes you hit on these guys that you give a significant amount of money to, and it's a significant amount of money for a practice squad guy, yeah. But it's not in the grand scheme of things. So on from Ryan Pope is not like you've blown a big chunk of your salary cap, right?
Yeah.
But it was worth the gamble. It hasn't seemed to pan out, but now we got Matt Nelson, and he looks like somebody that's worth developing, so he probably takes that spot.
I agree with you. I think Quinn won't bat an eye at losing that money. Thanks again, buddy. Appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely.
And until next week, let's go Lions.